Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Third Coast Podcast. I'm your resident producer, Dennis Funk. Last week, we had a flock of some of the greatest radio minds from all over the world listening and choosing the best audio storytelling of the year for the Third Coast Richard H. Treehouse Foundation competition. You can come and meet the winners and help us celebrate at our awards ceremony in Chicago this fall, where all will be revealed. The ceremony, hosted by Mike Pesca of The Gist, takes place during our Filmless Festival, a weekend-long celebration of listening from October the 23rd to 25th. There will be performances from some of the best podcasts and radio shows, audio screenings, beginners workshops, and of course, lots of radio hoopla, as we call it. Tickets for the 2015 Filmless Festival go on sale September the 9th, so be prepared because they go quickly. For a preview of what we have planned so far, visit thirdcoastfestival.org. If you need a listening room fix before Filmless, then join us on September the 17th for a night of Irish radio in the 5th Province pub at Chicago's Irish American Heritage Centre. There will be pints and bites and sounds galore. Seriously, what could be better than that? For tickets, visit thirdcoastfestival.org and click on happenings. Alright, that's it for me. Now, here's a brand new episode of ReSound called The First Show. So, if it's your first time downloading the podcast, you've picked a pretty good place to start. Oh, but one last thing. Due to the rights that we get from the BBC, one of the pieces that's in this show isn't allowed to be on the podcast. It's a piece called Tim Key's Suspended Sentence, and in the theme of firsts, it's all about writing the very first sentence to a novel. You can check it out on our website, thirdcoastfestival.org, for about the next 30 days, so it'll be there until the middle of September. Alright, sorry about that. Now here's the show.
I'm walking through an airport for the first time in my life. Hey Yaz, I'm just going to film this because I've never been on a plane before and I'm well, like, peeing myself.
From the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago, I'm Gwen Maxey, and this is ReSound.
It's like all the times I watch those airline programs on TV.
ReSound is a remix. Music, documentaries, found sound, sound bites, and things we love the first time we hear them. We listen to everything we can get our ears on, then bring you the best of what we hear each week on ReSound.
We're about to take off.
By its very definition, you never know how something will turn out the first time you do it. Whether it's a kiss, a recipe, a job, a drink, a drive in the car, or a trip to the moon.
We're moving. Yes, we're moving. We're in the air. This is so cool.
Firsts are filled with potential. Potential joy. Potential mortification. People may be watching. You might bomb. I remember vividly the first time I did stand-up in front of an audience instead of the mirror. Or the first time I sang the national anthem to a minor league ballpark instead of my dog.
Gwen Maxey.
Let's just say they were the first and the last time I did either. Today on ReSound, first sentences, the first day back, and every last first you can imagine. Stay with us. Having your first baby changes more than just your waistline. It can redefine who you think you are, who you want to be, and what you want for the rest of your life. And besides all of these heady philosophical things that becoming a mother for the first time invites, there are all the practical considerations, like getting some sleep, staying sane, and trying to balance work with childcare, a puzzle many parents struggle with and agonize over. Filmmaker Tali Abacasis is going back to work after two children and a long hiatus. She's documenting this return in her podcast, First Day Back. Here is the first episode.
Hi, I'm Tali. I'm a documentary filmmaker in Montreal and the mom of two boys, Jack.
I am a robot.
And Adam.
I'm a robot too.
After Jack was born, I went on maternity leave and I just didn't go back to work. Then I had Adam, and I still didn't go back. I couldn't figure out how to balance being a new mom and leaving the kids all day to get back into my career. My head was not there. Making my kids food and reading them books and schlepping them to the park just felt like what I was supposed to be doing. And so without any real plan, I put my career to the side. Adam has been home with me until recently, so I spend a lot of time with my kids. I do crafts with them, we make cookies, I make supper every night, and I volunteer at school. All that stuff I feel like they need. I've done a few small work contracts, but I haven't really been committed to getting back in. Mostly, I haven't wanted to do anything that would impact my kids' lives. One thing that I should mention right off the bat is that my husband has a solid job. We're not rich, and we've made sacrifices to our lifestyle to make this work, but we're not struggling. But now it's been 6 years, and I've started to feel like I need to get back in there. Like my career is feeling too far away, and I'm losing track of that other part of myself. Making ninjas out of pipe cleaners off a Pinterest page has certain rewards. But I am feeling like I need a little more. It feels like a lifetime ago that I was doing paid work or having any adult conversation that didn't revolve around my kids. I am so stuck in kidland right now that the other day I received an email with a heading about longer legs, and I thought it said Lego. And I was excited. I know I'm not the only one dealing with this. I've read all the mom blogs and the mom books, and they make me feel less alone, but they don't make it easier for me to know what to do and how to do it. Plus, being an arts-based freelancer makes returning to work seem like a huge puzzle. For people like me, there is no established structure for us to jump back into the workforce. We're like entrepreneurs in that way. I really didn't see that problem coming, and if you had asked me before having kids where I thought I would be at this point, I definitely wouldn't have seen myself here. Here's my husband David, who knows a trap when he hears one. So, do you ever describe me to people as a stay-at-home mom?
Have I ever done that? No. No, actually, I haven't. No.
So what do you tell people?
I usually say that, like, right now you're taking care of the kids, and at some point in time you're going to get back into work. But I wouldn't call that a stay-at-home mom.
Would you like me to be working?
Like what kind of working?
Would you like me to be bringing in money?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that would always be good to have more money, but I don't think, if it was like, would you like more money? Yes or no? It's like, yes. But then it's like, okay, well, at what cost besides the, you know, in terms of the hours or complication to, you know, logistics of life and getting kids to school and paying for babysitters or whatever to fill in the gaps and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Who will do all the things that I'm doing now? How do people have successful careers and be super available parents? What would that even look like? I remember that Anne-Marie Slaughter article in The Atlantic last year that basically said, women can't have it all. And she had a way bigger job than me. I don't know anyone who has it all together, so it feels like there are few real models. Possibly I should set the bar lower. But right now, my career expectations are about stalled. I ran into my old producer the other day and she said, "Oh, but we wrote you off a long time ago." I don't think she was trying to crush my spirit. I actually think she was trying to let me off the hook. That's just what people think when they see a woman take time to be with her kids. Granted, I took a lot of time. But clearly, if I don't do this now, everyone will have written me off. I just have to figure out how exactly to do it. My kids are now in school and daycare, which is a new thing. Jack just went into grade one, and Adam has started daycare part-time. So there's nothing holding me back, really. That's what this podcast is going to be about. I'm going to go from accidental stay-at-home mom back to working mom and try to figure out how to make it work for my family. I wrote a documentary proposal for an idea I had, and I've submitted it to a granting agency here in Montreal. There are a lot of in-between steps, but my goal is to be filming by next summer. I'll try to document the process and talk to other people about how they make it work. I want to see if I can take on this project while being fair to my kids, trying to feel less guilty, and being true to myself. You can join me for the ride. I'll try to be as open and honest as I can be. And possibly, I won't figure it out at all. It's been a few weeks of Adam going to daycare, and it's a bit depressing. I'm sure when he's there, he has a good time, but the drop-offs are just brutal. He screams and cries and says things like, "Mommy, don't leave me," and every day I think it's going to get better, and it seems like it's taking a really long time. It's pretty hard to do. It's been a few mornings that I thought I would record it just for the podcast, but it seemed so heartless to record him crying. And then this morning, I was holding him and he was screaming, and I had to hand him over to his teacher, Joanna, and I mean, it was like he was like made of Velcro. He would just holding on to me, and I had to rip him off me to hand him to her. And you have to be super stoic. They tell you, you know, smile and wave. And so I'm like, bye, as this child is screaming his head off and crying for me. Ugh. It really makes you wonder, like, why am I doing this? So, yeah. His teacher texts me after I leave to say when he stopped crying, and you know, sometimes it's pretty fast, but sometimes it takes a while, and I sit there with my phone and I think, has she just forgotten to send the text? You know, maybe he's stopped crying. And then she'll send the text a few minutes later, you know, no crying, and I'm like, oh my god, that took a long time. Ugh. There was an article in the Sunday New York Times this weekend by Heather Havrileski that struck a chord with me. She said that motherhood has been elevated to this all-encompassing identity with demands and expectations that eclipse everything else in a woman's life, and that the current culture demands that every mother be all in all the time. And so, bravo, I have been keeping up with that. But then as much as you hear you should be this all-in mother, I still hear this chorus in every other aspect of society calling, when are you getting back to real work? In the Times article, the author says that even in this supposedly enlightened day and age, a woman may feel like the same person inside after having kids, but what the world sees is a woman lugging around a giant umbilical cord. And I thought, sometimes I see myself that way. You know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I know it's tied up in that. My mom was one of the most important people in my life, and she died of cancer 7 years ago. She never got to see me as a mother. She never got to meet my kids, and I think about that all the time. She was incredibly dedicated to my brother and I. I think my childhood was pretty great, which is probably why I'm trying to replicate it for my kids. Most of my friends say that my mom was a mom to them too. She was always home, she made all kinds of things from scratch, and in my mind at least, she was very fulfilled by her role. Here's a conversation with Ben, my brother. And I'll try not to cringe as I hear my brother and I call my parents Mummy and Daddy. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is why I took this really long mat leave and why I, in my head, I'm having a hard time getting back to work. And I guess I'm wondering if it all comes down to Mummy and kind of modeling the behavior, who I saw her be. Well, like, how do you think she ever wanted to work?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she did those eBay stores. She did remember the Nintendo cartridges that she used to sell, the 101 games. And she did a couple other things. And she did, one while she was selling
she sold Regal.
Cabinets. Yeah, Regal, Avon. Daddy always said that she wanted to work. Like, maybe not work so much in a full-time capacity, but she wanted to be able to say she was making her own money.
I forgot about that.
She also tried to start a daycare at one point, although I think that was very short-lived.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was something... Oh, there was the Pampered Chef spoon holders.
Oh, yeah.
That she would buy at the dollar store and then sell on eBay for, you know, $10, $20 or something like that. And then they shut her down because they said they're counterfeit.
So I have to interrupt here. It's not that I forgot about these things. It's that I never really properly considered what they must have meant to her. That they might mean that she was looking for something. I feel like a total jerk because her businesses have always been funny dinner party material to me. She had all these sales gigs that she came up with. Besides selling from catalogs, she sold cookies on eBay. I mean, she sold food that she baked in our oven on the internet. She sold Nintendo cartridges that held 100 games in one. She got those from a guy who called himself Cobra in a non-ironic way. He would leave messages at my house saying, "It's Cobra calling," and he'd pull up to our house in his Trans Am with a Cobra airbrushed on his hood. My mom was definitely the only woman in our little Jewish suburban neighborhood having tea with a dude called Cobra. I didn't think of those things as being...
I don't know if there were... I mean, I don't think it's the same thing as... you know, a full-time job, but I think, like I said, she wanted to have that concept of making her own money, and I also think there was the idea of having something else to do outside of us, I guess? You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I wonder. Did she... Because I'm questioning also, well, why do I need to go back to work? And then I'm wondering, like, it was enough for my mom to be the mm-hmm. super mom.
She wasn't in any... career path. I mean, you know, she wasn't like making a name for herself or, you know, trying to be in a niche environment or like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if she necessarily felt she had something to go back to. I don't know. I mean, right. I don't, you know, I think maybe the situations are a little different where, you know, you have this career you've already started to build up for yourself. And she, I don't know, maybe Daddy would know better, but I don't feel like she really did. She became Mummy. She was Mummy. That was it.
And because in my mind, I mean, I don't know if it's because she's not here, but I wonder if she's become this larger than life
figure,
like this mother. And
made homemade fruit roll-ups and homemade everything. Exactly. Tried her hand at homemade pasta, homemade.
She made everything. I mean, it's a miracle that we were wearing store-bought clothing. Because I see her as somebody who found fulfillment being a mother, and it was totally enough for her, and she was just like uber mother. And I wonder if I am trying to replicate that somehow, just trying so hard to be this super, super present mother. It was almost a relief to hear that my mom also sought validation outside of her children. It made me feel like she wouldn't be disappointed in me if she heard that I needed to go back to work. So about this project that I'm applying for to get funded. Shooting a documentary, for those of you who don't know, requires long, long hours. When filming, by definition, I won't be around my home much, and that idea stresses the crap out of me. My kids have never even been to summer camp. I stayed with them all summer this year. Those of you with kids know how crazy that is. But so now, if this project works, I will have to face some serious fears. Fear that my brain has atrophied and I won't be able to keep up in a work environment. Fear that becoming a mom has shifted my focus so much and I've missed my best career years. I keep second-guessing this feeling that I want to get back out there because of the guilt. And my one biggest fear, that my kids will suffer with less of me. I decided to ask an expert what he thought about it. My question to you, I'm doing an interview with you. So, do you think that I work?
Yes, I think you work.
What do you think I do?
I think you make movies for adults.
That's true. Do you, like, do I, when I work at home, is that work? When I'm, like, cleaning and cooking and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's work. But it's not your job's work.
Well, the big theme of the thing that I'm doing right now is mummies and work. And should mummies spend more time with their kids or should they spend more time at work?
Mummies should work for getting money to live.
I'm kind of surprised because I thought your answer was going to be that mummies should stay with their kids all the time.
Why?
Well, just because I thought that's what you would prefer, to stay with me all the time.
Well, I'm okay without you.
Ouch. I can't say that didn't hurt to hear and make things feel more complicated. But that's what I should want him to say, right? That whatever I do, he'll be okay. Even without me, he'll be okay. Plus, let's be real here, he's only 6. He doesn't know what's best for him. So I just came out of a meeting with a production company with this guy, Philippe, who's a producer who I used to work with, and Miriam, who's the new producer at their company. She's heavily pregnant, and it was very encouraging. They want to know more. They're interested in the project. They'll be much more interested if I get the production funding that I applied for. But if they come on board, then they will help me find a broadcaster, and they'll help me finance, like, get the sort of bulk of the funding. So it was a real step in the right direction. It reminded me of the sort of hustle of freelancing and how, you know, in the first question out of their mouths when we come to the meeting is, so what are you working on now? And of course, you know, nobody wants to hear you're working on nothing. So I kind of threw it back at them like, oh, tons of stuff. I have a lot of balls in the air, but what are you guys working on? And it also reminded me of this other advice that a producer gave me early in my career, which is basically when somebody wants to take a meeting with you, even if you are looking at a blank calendar, always refuse the first meeting time. And sort of say, well, I can't do that day. And then the second meeting time proposed, move it by half an hour. So say, you know, well, I can't really do 1, but I could do 1:30. Because nobody wants to work with somebody who's not busy. Everybody wants to work with the busiest people. So if you look busy, it looks good for you. It's like some kind of freelancer math. Like first meeting X and then second meeting plus or minus 30 minutes. Anyway, I hope they don't listen to this podcast. All right, so moving forward. It's cold out and moving like a shark.
Getting Back Out There was produced by Tali Abacasis for her podcast, First Day Back. We were struck by the intimate moments Tali caught on tape. For instance, her son telling her that he didn't need her the way she thought he would. This one story covers familiar territory in a relatable way. And thanks to podcasting, Tally will be able to continue to document her experience as it unfolds. To hear the next chapter of Tally's story, you can subscribe to her podcast called First Day Back in iTunes or your app of choice.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The first time I hurt somebody on purpose.
Oh, my first time being second.
My first time being second.
My first betrayal, my first
lie.
My
first lie.
The first time.
And my
and
first
not the last time that I hit my sister.
The first time I cried in secret.
Artists Steve Heather and Sigmar Zacharias were also interested in the idea of firsts, but their approach is decidedly less straightforward. Through memory, sound, and music, they've constructed a collective biography of a life from 0 to 100. Here's a short excerpt of their sound art piece, My First.
The first time I kicked in my mother's belly, a man stepped on the moon.
My first breath.
My first tooth.
My first word.
My first step.
My first scar.
My first tooth.
My first contagious disease.
My first investigation into my own
shit.
First
time I saw a tree, I was about 3 years old because I'd spent most of my life inside or in hospital due to asthma. And when I came out, I just didn't know what these things were like moving back and forth. My mum had to explain what the tree was.
The first time I climbed a tree, being a girl, I thought I was very clever. But my mum wasn't very impressed.
The first time somebody said, this is your first
The first time having my hair curled in rollers and then pulling them out.
The first time I dressed up as Snow White, I was 4.
My first dolly, who was named Pamela.
The first time I didn't want anybody to know.
The first time I was in the witch's forest, I saw fairies. I was swimming in the ocean.
The first time I had chewing gum was probably
the
about
four. I was 4.
The first time I tasted Coca-Cola was in a milk bar in Bell Street, Coburg, in the late 1940s.
Ice cream in a pool, and it was on Black Friday, and we'd taken refuge at a friend's house.
My first food was probably banana, other than breast milk.
The first time I decided not to eat meat, I was 3.
The first time I met my father was at Spencer Street Station in 1946 when he was demobilised after the war. I was 2 years old.
This time my father went to Cairns for duty during the war and was on his return. The time we went into an air raid shelter during the war was when we used to visit my grandmother every week, and she had an air raid shelter down the street. And I can remember going in there, and there was a horse in there as well.
Yeah, yeah, I had a dog otherwise.
My first pet was a budgie that didn't move.
My first pet was an egg that I thought would hatch.
My first pet was a budgie called Phil.
My first bike.
First time I stacked my BMX and said, it wasn't me. Not my first bike.
My first bush knife was made from parts from the tip.
The first time I fell off my bike, I was learning to ride and thought my brother was holding the seat. I wanted to stop, but he wasn't there, so I rode into a lamppost.
First time riding the bike?
The first time I rode a bike, I fell off. I was about 6 and I really cried, but I can remember just crying and crying and crying. But anyway, I got back up.
My first push bike was used to start my business career.
My first day walking off to school.
First time going to school.
First day of school. I think I just went with the neighbours next door. I don't think my mother took me.
The first time I went to school, I was scared.
And I was really frightened of
that. My first school, it was a hellhole. There were snotty, bullying kids, and they were screaming, bad-tempered teachers.
We agreed to meet at playtime.
I remember sitting on green linoleum waiting outside the headmistress.
And how much it hurt and just ran away.
Waiting to get the strap.
The first time my son went to school, I was very anxious about placing him in a situation where external agents of socialisation would take over and he would be subjected to forces beyond my control.
The first book I read was something by C.S. Lewis. Prince Caspian?
Yeah, first book I really liked was The Hunger Games. It was really good. My first book, probably, well, first book I liked, probably The Twins.
The first book that I read was called Lassie.
The first book I read was Lassie, and I cried about the story.
First secret I told. The first time I experienced
first time
peer
I,
pressure.
I kind of experienced this
pressure. First time it wasn't all about me.
Peer group pressure.
That was the first time I felt left out.
Oh, the first time I got naked with friends, we were playing cowboys and Indians in the garden. It was like tickles, smiles, burps, giggles.
Really?
Jumping
left
right
out. I realised I was the only one with freckles.
My first time I hurt somebody on purpose, I pushed a boy I didn't know off the playground. The first and not the last time.
That was an excerpt of My First, produced by Steve Heather and Sigmar Zacharias for Soundproof, from RN's Creative Audio Unit at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. To hear the entire piece, visit our website, thirdcoastfestival.org. So, first off, I just want to say that there are a lot of you out there who've never contacted us. Well, today can be the first time you do. Tweet or Facebook us, or even write us an email for the first time. We're at resound@thirdcoastfestival.org. You've been listening to Resound from the Third Coast International Audio Festival in Chicago. I'm Gwen Maxey. The program is produced by Dennis Funk and curated by Johanna Zorn and Sarah Geis of the Third Coast Festival. You can hear today's program at thirdcoastfestival.org, where you can also hear more than 1,500 outstanding documentaries from around the world and subscribe to our podcast. Support for Resound comes from Emma, a web-based email marketing and communication service helping businesses and nonprofits manage their email campaigns and online surveys in style. More at myemma.com. The Third Coast International Audio Festival is a nonprofit arts organization made possible with lead funding from the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Additional support is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. The Third Coast Festival is supported in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council Agency. Special thanks to our many individual contributors from Chicago and around the world. The Third Coast Festival, now an independent arts organization, was originally founded at WBEZ Chicago. Resound returns next week with more radio that you can't hear anywhere else unless you live everywhere else.
Mais bien vite tu reviens. Et ma vie reprend son cours. Le dernier bonheur du jour, c'est la lampe qui s'éteint.
You've been listening to the Third Coast Podcast. If you like what you heard today, leave us a review on iTunes, send us an email, or let us know through Facebook or Twitter. You can also support us with a donation at thirdcoastfestival.org. As always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.